Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We are brought to you by ToughManTry.com, by Everyone.org. That's EveryOne.org. Cool new half marathon and 5K series. By RunCatalina.com, Catalina Eco Marathon, coming up on Saturday, November 19th. By our Challenged Athletes Foundation, we've raised over $75 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. You can check out any of our interviews on iTunes or on Babbittville.com. Our next guest, 2016 Olympian at 1,500 meters, and she did it the hard way, Brenda Martinez. Brenda, how the heck are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I thought I was watching track and field, and it looked a little roller derby-ish.
Yeah.
And not just the 1,500, the 800.
Yeah.
I mean, was there more contact in this meet than you've seen, or is that just the way track and field is?
I mean, you see it in track and field, but I felt like it was having, you know, you were seeing it more often in the championships, especially the Olympic trials. There's more tension there. It's more stressful. So I feel like girls didn't want to take the lead at all or anything like that. So, but yeah, I feel like I saw it more often here especially on the Olympic trials.
I was sort of expecting to see Ronda Rousey come out of the pits or something.
Yeah.
You gotta start wearing, you gotta be able to sell some sponsors for elbow pads, and you know, it's going to be UFC, a little forearm shiver, a little figure four, a leg lock. We're going to add full contact track and field. It's really fun. So, meanwhile, the 800. I'm watching the 800, and I'm watching you getting ready to basically slingshot out of the curve and do your patented come from behind. Then all of a sudden, you get stepped on. I mean, has that happened to you before? Where obviously, like we talked a little bumping, but getting stepped on like that, especially not early in a race, but just as you're rolling into your sprint, how tough was that to deal with?
Yeah, honestly, that's never happened to me. I've been clipped, and it never really stopped my momentum as much, but this time it completely stopped what I was doing, and it just pushed me out to lane four, and I mean, pretty much the race was already over. I couldn't regain my composure from that, and I mean, it was devastating, but, you know, I'm, like, grateful that I actually, like, signed up for the 15, so.
So the plan was the 800 was going to be the focus.
Yeah, I mean, even talking to the coaches, you know, the whole year we said, you know, the 800 is going to be my focus again this year. And, you know, until I have no more speed in my legs or I just don't feel, you know, that snappiness anymore, you know, once I get older. But we are going to try to stay in the 8 as long as we can. But, I mean, that all changed as Olympic trials. So now it's on to the 15.
So when you don't make the 800. And the plan was to make 800. That way you're sort of playing with house money when you go to the 15. You're going, okay, great. I'm already on the team.
Yeah, exactly.
So now you're not on the team.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, that's always a plan. Like, you always have to have a backup, especially, like, since they were so spread out in two sessions that we can still come back and do the 15. But, again, like, anything can happen in the 800. And it so happened, you know, something happened to me, so it was good that we had something lined up still.
Well, and then 4 years ago, you went to the trials and you were dealing with some injuries leading in. You were you know, sixth in the 800 and 12th in the 1500. And, you know, obviously that was devastating because you're hoping to go to your first Olympics. Now it's, okay, it's all in one basket. It's the 1500 and that's it. And when I'm watching that play out, and again, coming down the stretch, and now, you know, you're going by people and go, okay, Brenda's in third, and now you're the one who somebody's tracking down at the end there. Could you feel her coming?
Honestly, you never know in track. And I don't like looking back, so that's something I didn't want to do. But I just said, run through the line. Like, I don't care how you look, just run through the line. But I was prepared, like, to somehow respond if someone came up on me. And, you know, it was like the very last, like 10 meters that I sensed Amanda.
Yes.
And that's when I had like a little surge, but that surge like caused me to you know, make my legs buckle up, and I ended up just, like, diving through the line. But, no, I just had a fight for that. It worked out.
It worked out. We're talking, there was a lot of position. When I freeze frame at the top of the stretch, I'm like, there's no way. I mean, you're pretty far back at that point. And then it's like, oh, okay, good. She's there. And then Amanda Eckelstein is like, oh, wait, where'd she come from? So as you're going across the line, and we're talking 406.16 and 406.19, did you know that you had it, or did you have to wait while you were laying there on the track?
Honestly, I didn't know until, like, I kind of heard, well, I heard them, like, yell Shannon Roberry, like, for a second. Yeah. And there was, like, a long, long pause.
Like about a year?
It was, like, yeah, it was so long. And then it just got loud, and I figured that was for me. And I think I kind of heard my name, but the stadium was so loud. I think just because people were happy that I rebounded. But and then Jenny ran up, and obviously that's like, okay, I did make it.
She's either coming to console me or she's coming to congratulate me.
Yeah, no. The minute she said, "I'm so proud of you," I was like, I did it. Okay. It's for sure. Yeah.
Now, any words?
I mean, I was like half certain, but yeah.
Any words exchanged with you and Amanda? Because obviously you had been in that position before.
No, I didn't see her at all, actually. I mean, she dove as well. And I think people, like, went to go see if she was okay. And another group of people came to see if I was okay. I mean, I just remember, like, getting lifted and... Yeah. I mean, they were, like, instantly trying to interview us, and we just went to do our victory laps, and I think they just took the rest of the athletes off the track.
And I saw you've got a few cuts and bruises. You are an MMA athlete from that dive.
Yeah, I saw the replay. I think I actually spiked myself as I was falling down. I skidded on a track, so my elbow and my hips are a little bit cut up, but the one on my leg is actually from my spikes.
Oh, nice.
I don't know how that happened, but it happened.
Have you ever dove like that at a race?
No, I don't think I've ever fallen, like, in a race. I've, like, almost, like, fallen, but, like, caught my fall in the past, but never like that. Like, and I did it twice, like, pretty much, like, in, you know, those 10 days, which is, like, that never happens to me, but yeah.
So the interesting thing to me is, like we said, you had injuries going into the last Olympic trials, mm-hmm. and you ended up, you know, not making the team. And then you come to this one, and it's 4 years. It's not like it's every year.
Yeah.
It's 4 years that you're waiting for redemption, and then the 800 doesn't work out, and then you have to dig so deep to get the 1500. Does it mean that much more because of everything, the journey just getting here?
Yeah, I mean, even after the accident, obviously I was crying, and I was trying to hold back my tears, and, you know, I cried during the interviews, and then I immediately just started to cool down. And even when I finished cooling down, my coaches were, like, they were sad, like, they were crying. My husband was crying, and I've never seen him cry. Like, he's just not the type of person to cry, and he was not upset for me, but he was upset for, like, the girls as well that didn't make it.
Right.
And then I think the minute we got in the car, I, like, cried a little bit more, and then I just had to stop. I was like, you know what? I was like, Carlos, like, this had to happen. Like, this has to be my story. I was like, I have to make the team for the 15 now.
Right.
I was like, just take me to the store and get me a cold sandwich, like, something really quick, and take me back to the house, because we rented a house.
Yeah.
And our four dogs were there, so I was like, you know what, I just want to get back into my routine. Let me go take care of the dogs. And my teammate Boris actually made the team, like, right after the fall.
Right.
So I said, go take care of Boris. I know he's in drug testing. Go take care of him. Go celebrate. Come back as late as you need to. And let me just take care of myself. And, you know, I stopped crying then, and I told him to stop too. I was like, don't feel, like, sorry or anything like that. I'm fine. So I just took it as another day, and, you know, and then the next day I was fine. I felt like.
So take me back a little bit. When did you feel that, you know, it's one thing to be a great high school runner and run in college, but making that move from collegiate to professional and actually making a living doing this sport, when did you feel that was a possibility?
I would say my junior year in college. That was probably my best year. I ran 2 flat in 409.
Yeah.
And I was the fastest returner coming into the college system. And then, I went to Europe my junior year that summer going into my senior year. And that's kind of when I kind of tested the waters, like, hey, this is something I do want to do. And but, again, like, I got injuries my senior year. And, it was kind of a hard transition coming out of college, like not having a group, not having a coach for about 8 months. It wasn't until we saw or met Coach Vigil that he was willing to help us. It was a really tough transition.
I was gonna say, and at that point, wasn't Coach Vigil was pretty much retired, wasn't he?
He was still kind of involved in track and field. Like, so he was doing a lot of clinics still, but I don't think he had like athletes at the time.
Right, he wasn't coaching anybody.
I still think he was advising. Yeah, I still think he was kind of advising, but not really like full time coaching and whatnot. But then now he has like a few more athletes now, years past. But now he's like kind of, you know, there coaching more athletes.
What did it take you guys to convince him to coach you?
So my husband actually ended up calling him.
Yeah.
So we got in contact with him through, Carlos's like post-collegiate coach. 'Cause it was one of Coach Vigil's former athletes. His name is Marcos Ochoa.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
he's like, you know what, just give him a call. Like, we weren't even calling him to see if he would coach us. We were just like, coach, like, can you give us like the guidance on where to go? Like, do you know someone? And we told him, like, what had happened to us, and we're like, well, you know, I got denied from one group, and then the other group, like, I moved out to join another group, but then last minute they told me it wasn't going to work out, and I think he got really mad at that, and then he's like, there's no way, like, that should even happen to any runner, and that's when he just decided, he's like, you know what, he's like, I'm going to coach you.
Wow.
And we're like, wow, okay, like, we're not going to take this for granted, like, I promise you, and the rest is history.
Wow, and what year was that?
That was probably like 8 months after I graduated from UC Riverside.
Wow.
So that was like in March, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, 2011. March of 2011.
Well, and then from there you've had so much success with your bronze at the Worlds in 2013 at 800, and the being a professional runner is, it's such a tough deal, because in between Olympics, yes, there's world championships and a lot of things like that, but really the eyes of the world focus on the Olympics.
Yeah.
And, mm-hmm. and so now that you are going to be in Rio and you have that opportunity to really make a mark, what are your plans between now and a month from now?
Honestly, like I'm confident in the training right now. It's just about resting and, just getting the training in. There's nothing I can do that's going to get me fitter from now till Rio. So right now it's just about maintenance and staying healthy, getting the right therapy, taking my hot bath, and doing Normatec. So doing the things that I've been doing. I've been doing the strength work, so I'm confident I can do something good in the 15. I think now it's just, I have to shift my mentality from being an 800 meter runner to a 1500 meter runner now. But I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, the nice thing about that, when you come in as an 800 person, you've got that raw speed that that can take you in the 1500. Between 2012 and now, how have you changed as a runner?
I would probably have to say, I feel like I've changed in so many ways.
Yeah.
But I think when it comes to the training, I felt like I've learn to be a little bit tougher and not let up, I guess, in the training. Every year we've been adapting to newer and faster paces. So, and I owe all that to like Carlos and my teammates. Like, they're the ones kind of helping me push the envelope, and me having to lead the team as well. Like, if I have a good workout, then most likely my teammates are going to have a good workout. So just trying to have that right energy at the track or on the trail, and just trying to do that, because I feel like that's my duty as an athlete as well, trying to lead my team,
yeah,
I would say.
When you look at the resurgence of American running in really since, you know, since Meb's medal and Dina's medal in 2004, it really is the teams, right? It's the fact that you had the Mammoth Track Club, and then you've got Alberto's group, and then the Hansen group, and you've got a team now training up at Big Bear. How important is that team dynamic?
It's very important. I feel like we kind of give each other the courage to push and not be afraid. But at the same time, it's you got to be careful who you let in the group. I mean, we've had a couple athletes come and go like this year that kind of ruined the chemistry. And you have to bring on the right type of person. And, you know, they got to be willing to offer something, you know, to the team as well. So, right now the attitude that we have at practice is really great. We're just having fun and we're holding each other accountable. We're just having fun now. Like, the hard work's done, and we just get a lot of support from each other.
So when you go to the Olympics, when are the rounds for the 1500 start? Will you be able to do opening ceremonies, closing ceremonies? What will be the plan?
I think I leave the 3rd, August 3rd, and then I think my round starts the 12th, 14th, and then I think the final is the 16th.
Okay.
I think my husband wants me to go to the open ceremonies, but I'm kind of like, oh, I don't know. We'll see if I'm going to be on my feet for a long time.
Yeah,
We haven't decided yet, but I think I'm going to leave maybe a week before, or 5 days or something like that, before the closing ceremonies, just so I can get out of there and go to Europe and see if I can do some racing over there. Because the season's not over, but we'll see how I feel after the Olympics.
What I remember from the last Olympic the time of the 2012, you were injured going in, and you obviously didn't make the team, and then you were canceling your European trip because of injuries, right? Was it hamstring or ankle? I can't remember exactly what you had.
It was like the peroneal area, like around the ankle region.
Yeah.
It was just a lot of like overworking that muscle or tendons, like just because of the turns on the track, you know. Running the 800, you're running aggressively on the track,
right,
on the turns especially. So it was just a lot of work that I had put in on my legs.
And so you had one doctor telling you had tendonitis, another doctor telling you it's a stress reaction, and then the MRI is clear. And but at the same time, you're basically, God, I was planning to go to Europe. I'm going to cancel all this because I can't run. And then you see our buddy Dan Selstad, and the next thing you know, one treatment and... Okay, I think we're going to keep him in our plans, I'm going to Europe and going to go make a name for myself.
Yeah. No, we were just so grateful for Dan at the time that he fixed the problem. And, we were ready to go after that.
That's so amazing.
Yeah.
It really is. So when you look back at your career, what do you see as your best race ever? Was it what you just did at the 1500?
I feel like it's between this, what happened this weekend or this past 2 weeks, and obviously the bronze medal in 2013. Yeah. But I don't know. I feel like this one was kind of reassuring me that I can do it. And, you know, I can never give up on myself. And that's something I didn't do. So I feel like I'm just going into Rio with a lot of confidence now. Because it was 6 races in 10 days and, I wasn't like the freshest coming in.
Right.
But I definitely was like, I would say I'm the strongest, I would say, mentally. So that gives me a lot of confidence right now.
So I was reading online, basically when you and Carlos you'd basically jump over fences at high school tracks to go practice, to go work out. And he'd be out there on a bike with a headlamp on and for your late night runs. So those early days, you were struggling. I mean, you didn't have a lot of support. Yeah. You're just basically, the hard part is if people go, they're only running for a couple minutes. And so they really could really work a full-time job and just sort of squeeze in their training. There's just no way when you're racing against people from other parts of the world who they are, you know, getting funded by the government, et cetera. Just that journey from not having much to getting support from New Balance and some of the other folks so that you could actually rest, recover, weight train, flexibility, and do all the stuff that you needed to do.
Yeah.
How tough was that?
It was really hard. I mean, we had to push our workouts to the evening so that no one would see us.
Why? Now, why would you? Because they wouldn't let you use the track?
No, because, we would train in the morning or, you know, midday or, you know, maybe kind of early evening.
Uh-huh.
And there'd be, like, a coach or like, a security officer or a police officer being like, hey, like, the track's closed to, like, the public or, or something like that. And they would actually lock up the gates and kick us out.
Really?
So now it's, I feel like it's changed now. I feel like people know who we are and what we're about. And now that Big Bird Track Club is a nonprofit.
Yes.
You know, now there's a few more like opportunities opening up where there's, you know, Azusa Pacific, they actually let us train there in the morning. And, you know, we're really, you know, good friends with the coaches now. And my high school just got a new track. So they had a dirt track for a long time. And now they're opening, you know, they just finished the track and they're opening their doors to us as well. So I feel like now that people are aware of what we're trying to do and develop American distance running, that they're going to start to open up the doors. But at first it was really hard when it was just me and Carlos.
Yeah.
You know, and a little Honda hatchback pulling up with a bike and whatnot. So that didn't seem legit at the time.
I love that. And what would it mean to you to come home with a medal? You've gotten a medal from a world championship, which is spectacular. Mm-hmm. You got a bronze. But the whole idea is, if you're going to get a medal, you sort of don't want to be looking up at anybody. You sort of would like to be at the top rung and looking down. What would it mean to you to come home with a gold medal from Rio?
I mean, that would, it's any athlete's like dreams come true. You just know that everything that you put in was worth it. And, I mean, it's just a matter of being tough out there and representing USA, you know, the best possible way. I mean, it's a journey, and that's something I look forward to because I know I put in the work.
So when you finish the 1500 and you're laying on the track and you finally realize that you're going to the Olympics, what was not just your reaction, but Coach Vigil and Carlos, what was their response?
They didn't even know what to tell me. Like they were, my husband was kind of like, okay, he's like, the first thing he told me is like, I didn't think you were going to make it because I saw your arms like flailing like the last 50 meters. He's like, that's when I realized he had done six races.
Yeah.
He's like, and I forgot to even think that you were going to be tired. He's like, and then you somehow just found another gear and you did it. So, I mean, obviously he hugged me, he kissed me, and then I didn't see Coach Beal until my victory lap, and he was crying, and then I started crying, and someone actually took a photo of it, and Coach already, like, you know, he got, like, a copy of it, and he was going to mail it to me, and so I'm looking forward to seeing that photo, too, because we were both crying and, like, holding each other, you know, over the fence, so that was really special.
Well, you've had a long journey, you know? You've had a long journey to get to Rio, and obviously well-deserved. Oh, and now are you guys training up in Big Bear? Where are you training?
Yeah, we've been living in Big Bear since Coach Real started helping us with March 2011. So we've been up on the mountain for about 5 years now.
How big is your team?
It's about 8 athletes right now, and I think we're having a few athletes that just graduated from college, and they're going to come visit after the season. Once I'm done training or done racing, they're going to come visit and see if it's a good fit for them. So I think the group is going to grow, definitely.
Love that. Hey, Brenda, thank you so much for taking time.
No, congratulations.
I just love the fact that you're going to Rio. That's going to be so much fun for you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Give my best to Carlos.
I will. Thank you.
Again, this is Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We are brought to you by ToughManTry.com, by Everyone.org, by RunCatalina.com, our Challenged Athletes Foundation. We've raised over $75 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check us out on Babbittville or on iTunes. Subscribe to our newsletter. And as always, endurance lives here.